The Somebody You Love podcast is recorded on the lands of the Darug, Gundungurra, Ngunnawal and Gambri peoples. We pay our respects to all elders past and present, and we extend that respect to any Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders who are listening. As the people who make up the oldest continuous cultures in the world, the First Nations people of this land have a rich history of resilience and growth in the face of adversity and trauma. It always was, and it always will be, Aboriginal land.
We would also like to acknowledge that the sex industry is incredibly diverse and we can only speak for ourselves and our own experiences, and we do not speak on behalf of anybody else.
We love that you are listening to us, but we encourage you to make sure that your source of information about the sex industry goes beyond just us and that you are listening to all different voices, because we are not reflective of the broader experience in the industry. Welcome to Somebody You Love, or The Sale of Two Titties. I'm Jenna Love.
And I'm Holly Hart.
And we're experts in disappointing our parents, breaching community guidelines, and banging the people who vote against our rights.
2 years ago, mid-pandemic lockdowns, we launched our first podcast episode. Since then, we have created dozens of episodes exploring a range of topics. We've had hiatuses, we've had life changes, we've aged over 700 days, we've changed some of our hot takes and probably changed some back again. We thought we'd come back today to the start and give our listeners a bit of an update on where we're at, where the show's at, where our work has taken us in the past 2 years, and our life changes. There's been a lot going on, and although we touch on a whole lot of topics and we speak to a whole lot of people, we haven't really given you guys a bit of an update on us.
Yeah.
Although we do post frequently on social media, we do drop little hints throughout the episodes about what's been going on in our lives. We thought it'd be really cool to do our 60th episode as a bit of a recap or a bit of a catch-up on who we are now.
Yeah. So Holly actually went back and listened to episode one. And
it was a nightmare.
Yeah, I don't want to do it. So I'm impressed that you did. It's funny because I listen to all of our – once Mr. Love has done the initial edit – I listen to the episode to make sure there's no big mistakes or issues before we publish it. But Holly refuses to do that because she hates hearing her own voice. I'm fine with it. But then the thought of going back and listening to one from 2 years ago terrifies me. That I can't handle. But you just went and did it. Oh, thanks.
Yeah, I went and did it. You are professional all the way through. I think I've had a big learning curve and I still am sure I have a long way to go, but you can really hear the amateur in that first episode, and it is embarrassing.
What has changed since then? So we're still mates. That's good.
We get on.
We do.
We manage it.
We get on okay. Yeah, we cope. That's very nice, isn't it?
We have a wonderful relationship. It's still fantastic. I wonder, and this is a really cynical take, but I think when people see a friendship really grow really fast and become really big, that a lot of people sit there and go, oh, yeah, we'll wait for that to blow up or wait for that to end. I don't know. Maybe that's just the asshole in me that thinks that about other people. I don't know. It's just really nice to I just wonder sometimes whether people see us go quiet on social media about something and think, oh, they haven't mentioned each other. I wonder if, I don't know. Maybe it's because I love celebrity news, and the minute I see one celebrity unfollow another or something, and I'm like, oh my God, there's a breakup. We are strong.
It is an interesting dynamic, isn't it? Being both having profiles, I guess, and having our own, and our relationship is, quite public, but it's also the vast majority of it is we interact in private, right?
Yes.
Across every single social media platform that exists. But that is an interesting dynamic because people will comment on things we've said about each other and we're like, because,
we exist publicly.
We kind of do,
And people are invested in our relationship. I guess, it's really nice that, there is no secret scandal. There is no no breakup. We are Prinny scratching some cardboard. Oh, she's really enjoying that. Yeah. We are still really, really close, and that's wonderful.
And everyone wants to know how close Holly is with Mr. Love. That's That's always a question.
Yes, they really do love that. And the answer is very close. Well, at least from my end, very close.
It's so one-sided. No, it's not. We have our family group chat and the three of us are in contact every day and it's bloody lovely.
It's very really nice. Lovely. Yeah. Yes, I have put a note here, you know, that our relationship is very strong and Jenna's relationships are incredibly healthy in no small part because she chooses fantastic, sane partners. And of course, she's a fucking delight. So, you know, that really bolsters all of her relationships in her life.
I find fantastic, sane people incredibly attractive, which I know it's a bit out there, but
which is weird because I'm insane, but you've got me. So
it's balance. Yeah.
Jenna has now stepped up to the role of president for the peak sex worker body for Australia, the Scarlet Alliance.
So I'm technically the acting president because I was not elected into the role, but the person that was the president has resigned. So I'm carrying out the rest of the term. It's a technicality.
Mm. Keeps you busy though, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. Yes, it really does. And
fell into that.
I think that's what happens with those kind of roles. No one really wants to do them, which I'm getting a lot out of it as well, but it is a lot of work. It's something I was very, very, very hesitant to do, something that I think I successfully managed to avoid doing for about 4 years while I was the secretary. I carved myself a little niche where I was quite necessary in the role that I was doing, and so anytime, you know, the presidency had changed a couple of times in those 4 years and I was always like, oh no, I've got to do this, you know. And then this time there was no escaping it. but I have loved a lot of it. It's definitely, you know, it's time consuming and it can be really difficult. I think even though like we work as a board, the workload is shared relatively equally in a lot of ways, and decision making is all consensus where we all have to sort of agree on everything. So, but I think people still see the title of president and think, you know, and they can ascribe like blame for the organization or perceived harm or whatever to you, and probably the same applies to the CEO. Whereas that's not, you know, I think we all know that that's not actually how things work. It's never one person running the show, but having yourself out there with that title can be a little bit terrifying.
Definitely. But there's an opportunity for being a scapegoat there. I can see.
Yeah,
that.
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, I love it. I'm so, so incredibly grateful to be in that position and to be able to do all the work that I do. You know, I'm one of the big things that allows me to do so much volunteer work is that I'm a sex worker. So that's something that, you know, it allows me the flexibility to be able to do that, which is great. But also just a lot of the time I'm, you know, I'm never speaking on behalf of my peers, but I sometimes am speaking about the industry, and I really, you know, I feel really honored because I understand the weight behind that, and obviously always have that knowledge that I'm just one person with one set of experiences, and a lot of those experiences are really privileged. So I'm conscious of that, but also honored. Anyway, I've waffled. That was like a fucking presidential acceptance speech.
I am incredibly proud of you, and I think a lot of the community are incredibly grateful for what you contribute. I've also noted here that you continue to do a lot of media pieces and interviews, which also contributes a lot to destigmatizing the industry and putting a human face to it. And you always do that with such class, and you're so articulate and wonderful at representing the industry and say just what needs to be said. And obviously a lot of that comes from your experience within your roles and the things that you've seen. But yeah, it's just such a powerful a powerful representation of the industry, and we're very lucky to have the Scarlet Alliance and very lucky to have you there. So,
and somehow I've not been cancelled yet.
It's great.
There was an attempted cancelling, but it did not succeed.
No.
That's a life update for you.
I'll be like a little terrier if someone tries to cancel your job.
But, you know, I'm waiting for it. I'm waiting for it. And when you do speak to the media regularly, I think it's somewhat out of your control. Like I know that at some point some journalist is going to write that I said some cooked shit, and that's I'm just going to have to deal with what comes with that.
Yeah, it is fraught, isn't it? Speaking to the media.
It's just, that's the risk you take, 100%. So in other good news, Holly triumphantly bought her first home.
Yes, I whinged, I think, a lot in the first episodes about, or not whinged, but I did mention that my whole life revolved around saving a house deposit, and I did it, and I'm in a home, and that's lovely, and now I'm fighting the interest rates like the rest of the nation, or a lot of the nation, and the rising cost of living, which, as you've said, again, very, very privileged. I'm very fortunate, and I could be in a much worse position, but yes, I'm can relate to a lot of
people.
We're
all feeling it though.
With new mortgages right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
But great. Good for me. Big change.
Yeah. And you were. I mean, you were so dedicated to that goal.
Yeah.
And you were incredibly driven, and you put things aside to be able to achieve that, which is.
I did nothing for years and years except work. I was, I really had, I think, I don't know if I talked about it on the show, but I know I've told a few people, including Jenna. I had spreadsheets of things where I had like, I'm allowed to buy one pair of tracksuit pants this month because Corbin had eaten through the pockets of the other ones. And so I finally decided that that meant I could spend $50 on two pairs of tracksuit pants. Like I was so dedicated to not spending a cent. I was incredibly frugal for that time. And, you know, I know people, everyone who saves for a house does go through that. It's not an easy thing. And, but we got there, and I think a big part of the pleasure of that, especially as a sex worker, is that now I no longer have to fear a landlord and have to worry about, will they come around, and do I have to make sure I don't have a client, and all of the fraught stress that comes with being a sex worker with a landlord. Having a landlord is stressful enough. It's even worse when you're lying about your job because of the stigma. So
yeah, absolutely. Nice. And you put all your, you know, all your lubes and everything in the wardrobe, but then are they going to go through the wardrobe? Because, you know, who knows? They just come traipsing through your fucking house. So yeah, oh, yuck. Awful.
Stressful.
Yep. I got a new cat.
You did. You did.
I did.
You did that.
I did do that. Mr. Love and I did that. I'm sure many of you have seen Moritz on social media. So I now have Moritz and Ava.
There was something special when I was listening to the first episode. We were talking about my household zoo, and we were talking about Corbin, who was almost 2 years old at the time. And you described him as a situation, and it just feels really fitting that we've come full circle and 2 years later you have a cat who is quite a situation.
Yes.
So we've both been through it now. Yeah.
It really, you know, choices were made and we've got what we've got. And, you know, when you buy, what's it called, adopt a cat that was like in foster care, they normally give you like a 2 week grace period where obviously if you bring the animal into your home and it's really not working, you can take it back, which I think is such a great concept. But 2 weeks is just not enough for you to find out what a demon they are. Like you just, it really comes out slowly and then it's very, very apparent all of a sudden. So Maury is, he's adorable. He is so gorgeous. He loves a cuddle. And thank God, because if he didn't, there would be no redeeming qualities. Because he's a goblin. He's a little bin goblin. He just loves to.
He loves the bin.
Loves the bin. Loves the bin. Loves getting himself, has no fear, like no fear. I think he is missing the fear gene. Actually, there was this like young adult fiction series called Fearless that was being released when I was like a young adult, and I loved it. And it was about this girl that was born without the fear gene.
Right.
And that's Moritz. Like,
Okay.
And often clients will be like, wow, he's so friendly. I'm like, yeah, I know. Like he's not afraid of strangers. He's not like he should be, but he just, nothing frightens him, which is so, like, he is never allowed outside because he'll be straight under a car. Like, he'll just be like, oh, what's this? A wheel? Oh, fuck.
Yeah. Like, that's like how dumb Corbin is.
Yeah.
It's just, exactly. Really, it aged me 10 years having Corbin. Yes. All my other pets. I mean, Hamish being a dog, anyone who's owned a puppy gets it. Puppies are fucked. And it's one of the things I always tell people when they get a puppy. Mm. They go, oh, I'm getting a puppy. And I'm like, well, congratulations. But nobody's probably told you, but having a puppy is horrible. Everyone goes, oh, it's so cute, blah, blah, blah. Mm. No. Puppies are nightmares. They destroy everything. They don't love you at first. I got quite depressed when I first got Hamish. I nearly gave him back. I nearly drove back to Sydney. I couldn't do it. So it takes a lot, and people glorify it. And so it's sort of like when it happens, it terrifies you. Anyway, my other pets were nothing like that.
Mm.
They've all been dreams.
Cats usually,
they're not that bad.
Are pretty chill.
Corbin
and Moritz, yeah,
horrible. So it was a real shock.
I've got to say, is it because they're boys?
I feel like that's like
they
common
do have that in common.
Here.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
Possibly. And we discussed that before I got Moritz, and I still made the mistake.
Yeah.
But the thing that gives me hope is that now Corbin has calmed down a lot.
He's so much better. I don't know if he's just so huge now. Like, he doesn't have the energy to be as annoying. I mean, yeah, he has gotten
he's
a lot better.
He's not fat, though, is he? It's just
no,
fur.
He's just a big cat. Yeah. Like, he's just a big boy. Mm. I think, honestly, yeah, like, the things that were really upsetting back then was he had pica.
Mm.
So he ate my tea towels, my tracksuit pants, blankets. He would eat. He would swallow the cotton and it would come – like, that was very dangerous. That was very stressful. He would wake me up at 5 a.m. meowing for food. Now he still wakes me up, but in the middle of the night for a cuddle. He'll give me one little meow and then he'll flop down and then he's asleep for a cuddle. So that's quite cute. He didn't love me for, like, the first year or so, and he wouldn't give cuddles to me.
Yep.
So all of those things have resolved now. He would torment Mouse a lot more. Now he sometimes winds her up, but much less. So I have hope for you that within the next 12 months you might start to see a decline in the insanity of Maury.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see in 2 years' time when we do our next follow-up episode. We'll see where we're at.
My friend the other day thinks a friend of theirs' kitten is pregnant. And they said, are you two up for a third? And I was like, mate, we are barely hanging on by a thread with two. I was ready for double the workload.
Yeah.
But it's an exponential situation. Like, And Ava really lulled us into a false sense of security because she is the perfect angel cat.
She seems so lovely.
And we knew that we wouldn't get a cat as perfect as her, but we thought, it won't be as perfect, but it'll be fine. We didn't 80%. Know it would be like a literal reincarnation of Satan, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
So anyway.
Lessons were learned.
But he's cute.
And he's so cute.
And he's good. He's good at cuddling.
Yeah. I still don't tour. But I have been working on my agoraphobia. I've been saying that for years. I'm working on it. This year I have been
working on it. Yes.
Yes. And my biggest goal this year is to finally meet the love cats and have those famous cuddles from both of them. So I am really, really hopeful. And hopefully also eventually we get some little tours happening. That would be really nice.
That would be so great.
Just fly me to you sort of things or whatever. Where
just
I can just go and meet some
fly
people.
Me to you.
I don't mean it like that, but
just once a month to
go and meet people who are not
just to Paris,
who are out
Milan.
There.
Yeah. Oh shit.
Yes, Jenna has made some t-shirts. What's going on with that?
I really should promote them on this platform because they're basically merch for this podcast, and I've never mentioned them on the show, which is a bit dumb. So I had a photo shoot last year where I wanted a top that just said whore because, you know, I love the word. I think we discussed that on our second last episode.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't find – everything I found online had, like, too much going on. It wasn't just plain. And so I made my own top and just, printed the words whore. The word whore. Sorry, it's one word. And I did the photo shoot, and then a lot of workers commented on my photos and were like, oh my goodness, where did you get that top? And I was like, well, I made it and I could make more. And I freaking love like crafting and making stuff.
She loves a project.
I love projects. I love like setting up a system.
Yeah. Oh, a spreadsheet. Oh, I love a whole thing happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Big fan. So I decided that I would make it and do it kind of under the umbrella of somebody you love. I asked if Holly was okay with that. And she was like, yeah, babes, do whatever the fuck you like, want, which is usually her response. Yeah. Yeah. So on the Somebody You Love website, which is somebodyyoulove.net, there is a tab for merch or store. I don't know what it says. One of those. You'll figure it out. and you can buy handmade shirts from me, which they're gender neutral. There's different options for cuts and stuff. And there's one that says whore, which I've asked that only sex workers use that or wear those tops. But there's little ally ones that just have a little red umbrella on them. So it's kind of a subtle thing and you can decide how much you disclose. There are ones that say somebody you love if you just want to get the word out there about the podcast. And then there's like a silhouette of a woman holding a red umbrella. Well, a woman holding an umbrella and the whole thing's red, which is, I don't know. I think she's like, she looks like a superhero. It's like
a empowered sex Wonder worker. Woman.
Yeah.
And not that you have to be empowered by sex work.
No, but, you don't have to be. But if you want to be, that's cool. That's you cool can. Too.
We support it.
Yeah. So buy some t-shirts. Because why not?
They fit great. They're great quality. I love them. I wear mine all the time.
I did a lot of research before launching and I got ones that I think are really nice. So yeah.
And if you go on the podcast social media on the Twitter or the Instagram, I think if you, I don't know if you've put them in special sections or anything, but if you scroll down a little bit, you will see pictures of people wearing the shirts and what sizes they're wearing, and you can just get an idea of how the cuts and the fits and oh, perfect. Wow, excellent.
They're all on
so
the, like
it's
you can,
all there.
Yep. Yeah.
You can't get it wrong. And if you do, she'll help you work it out. She's
maybe
cat's mother.
Mm. Yeah.
All right.
So Holly, what did you think about tell us your observations from listening to the first episode.
Yeah, yeah. It was much better than I was expecting, even though I'm like, oh, it...
That's nice.
Like I said, Mr. Love's work was amazing. He is just so great at what he does for us. It was just so professionally put together for a first episode. Your work in putting the episode together was brilliant. You are so professional at media and always have been. I was really rough and just very nervous sounding, but it's cute. It was cute in hindsight. I was horrified by how much I said, just constantly. It was
and
such
you
a
know
filler
what?
Thing.
Mr. Love probably cut out a bunch as well.
He would have
like
done
cuts
so
out
many.
A lot
he
of
cuts
our
out
shit.
Of ums
so the stuff that's still
and,
in there.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yes. Yes. So that's absolutely horrifying. And I have tried, I think, really a lot since then to not use as many filler words in general. That's something you and I have talked about. It is an interesting thing that when you also look into, I'm going to butcher explaining this, but basically the women tend to sort of be conditioned to use filler words as a way to seem less aggressive when we communicate. And, that's something I sort of didn't know about. And Jenna was sort of talking to me about it. And I did a little bit of research years ago, probably months, years, whatever, who knows. It's just one long conversation with us. So I lose track of time. It's just in the ether of our communications. Really fascinating how we probably all use a lot more filler words than we ever realize, particularly women. And so I think I've tried to work at getting a little better at that, but the first episode, it's very apparent and particularly, awful.
Yeah, I mean, I've written myself scripts where, each word is carefully chosen and there's obviously no filler words written in, and then I find myself delivering them and I'm adding in filler words because I'm trying to soften it, because what I've written, I worry comes across as too harsh, too direct, too confident, and these are all things that, as somebody who was socialized as a woman, that I've been criticized for my whole life. So it is an interesting... It's very interesting. I'd love to get rid of the filler words, but then I also know that I intentionally put them back in, even though I know that they're not necessary.
I had never known or heard anything about that. That's a little rabbit hole for some listeners to go and have a little look at and a research about. A fascinating concept. I wasn't aware of.
One of the things you noticed was we talked about Like, we cringed at the idea of our mothers potentially listening to the podcast.
Well, you said if anyone listens to this podcast outside of our mothers or something like that, and then we went, oh, no, not our mothers. I hope they don't listen. And it's really funny looking back because we did have Mama Love on the show. She was amazing.
And my mum and dad listen to every episode.
Yeah.
They are massive supporters.
Yeah.
They, you know, I think she said this during her episode that, you know, there's parts of it she wishes she didn't hear. and I'm like, you don't have to, babes. Like, literally no one's forcing you.
She's so supportive. Like, she just wants
but
to
they
be.
They are. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And
did
they
she
really,
get a t-shirt?
She bought one for my sister.
Oh, I love that.
I don't think she's got one for herself.
Mm, she should get a big haul
what
one.
What a cunt.
No,
she's not allowed.
Who
knows that? Who knows? But I think I would know. And there was something a little while ago, some article or what was it that I did? I don't know. I did some piece of media and my mum like heard about it but hadn't seen it. And she was like, what's that? Where's that? You know? And I said, oh, do you want me to send you all the media that I do? Because, and this, I think this was before she was on the show actually, but I was like, do you want me to? Because I always thought you probably wouldn't want that. Also because a lot of the media I do when it comes out, like they're just puff pieces. They're not like, they don't actually say anything about me, you know, or the industry or anything insightful. She was like, oh, we want to, you know, they want to see everything I do. So it's bloody lovely.
That is so fucking nice.
Yeah.
I love that.
It is.
And
I'm very lucky. She's great. And updates on your mother.
Oh, let's not even go there.
That's something that hasn't changed really.
Well, it has. I'd say it probably got worse. I'd say we got to the point where, I don't feel the need to have that person in my life anymore who doesn't support me for who I am. And
I think that is fucking fantastic.
Yeah, honestly.
That you've got to that point.
Yeah, sure, exactly. I mean, it would be really nice if that was not the situation. But I feel very loved and supported by everyone that I do have around me. And I feel like I'm making the decisions that make me happy and living for myself. And that is the ultimate goal, I think.
Chosen family bitches.
Somebody asked me on my Instagram, I had one of those anonymous question box things, and somebody asked me, do you think parents need to accept that their child is a sex worker? It's heartbreaking to know that your relationship with your mother is strained. And my response to it was, I think that as a parent, the time comes when you have to accept your progeny as their own individual with their own mind and life. I do accept that this can be really challenging, but you owe it to your offspring to respect their decisions as long as those decisions seem to be made autonomously and in sound mind. You don't have to like the choices that your kids make, but you should accept their right to make them. I went on to say, I think this is the case with anything that your adult offspring does, who they date, their career, how they dress, their politics. I think it's fine to have adult discussions about any pressing concern for them if you're worried about their safety or their health, but beyond that, it's not your business. And I have discussed before on the show that my mother's issues with my work aren't from a misplaced concern for me. It comes from a shame of what other people might think should they find out, and not wanting me to be public about it. And that's a shame because I'm very proud of what I do. And I think both within the sex work, the actual work, sex work itself realm, and in the advocacy space, I don't do anything near what Jenna Love does. But I certainly think we've talked before about being face out in itself is some element of advocacy, doing this show, being on social media and promoting the just sort of normalizing and humanizing sex work is advocacy in itself. And I'm really proud of what I do. And that's a shame that that's not shared by my blood. But like you said, chosen family, and I feel so much love and support. So we're really good here. I'm doing great. Yeah.
I don't know who it was I was speaking to, but I said, I don't think anyone's ever cut out a family member and regretted it. Like, whenever somebody says, oh, I'm cutting off this person, I'm like, fucking congratulations.
Yeah.
It's like when relationships end. I'm always like,
that
brilliant.
Before. Yeah.
Because it always happens too late.
Sure.
It always should have happened sooner than it did.
Yeah.
And it's always a good thing. Not always. 9 times out of 10.
Yeah. You know, somebody's moving on to.
I think it's the right choice to make.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep. I really like that. I respect that. And I just do want to say I might come across a little bit heartless here, and I hope I'm not. I hope anyone listening, obviously,
not at all.
It's not a simple situation, and it's not been, really black and white scenario. This has been very complex situation.
And you're kind of on the other side of it.
I am.
A little bit. Yes. You know, yes. If you were talking 100%. In the middle of it, it would have been
different. It's been a journey. It's a journey. Yeah. Yeah. In the first episode, we discussed the BuzzFeed video that Jenna featured in. I think we will link it in the show notes in case somehow you've missed it. We were talking about the reactions to it and at the time, the comments that were there and that you had been interacting with some of the responses on the Facebook post about it.
I haven't done that in a while. I might have to go back and find it.
I do like you having little social media battles. Yeah.
I love it. Yeah.
Jenna, that... You have discussed before to me personally, I'm not sure whether we've discussed it on the show, that you continue to get bookings from that people still bring it up.
Yeah.
What do you still see with your work today from that?
Less so now than in the first year or two, but I definitely do. I still get bookings from people who say, I first discovered you on this random BuzzFeed video and then I found, and that's actually how they found me. So something that I certainly wasn't expecting it, but it has brought me a lot of business. So I'm very grateful for that. And a lot of, like, what was interesting for a while was it bought me a lot of couples. I got, and I think it's because it was reaching a different audience to what my marketing and my social media generally reached. It got a lot of views on Facebook. And I think like it was reaching more women and more like married women or women in long-term relationships. And so they were coming across the video and then showing their partner and being like, let's go see this person. And that was obviously, I think I've discussed at length how much I love seeing couples.
Yes.
So that was really great for me. And just a lot of people that are complete newbies to the industry, a lot of people that didn't know the industry existed or that there were people who worked, independently outside of brothels, for instance. So in terms of, exposing me to a new audience, it's been great. Like, cannot complain.
even 2 years later, you still feel some
and it's,
of that.
It's quite, it's a different type of labor when you're seeing clients who are brand new to the industry.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? That's so true.
Because you do feel there's like a little bit of responsibility there because you want to set, if they're going to go forward and see other people, you want to set them up the right way. And you want them to have a positive experience in the industry. You also, their knowledge is so on the industry, not on anything else, obviously, is so basic and so like, and they have all these assumptions and they really are not engaged, like say our listeners are. So that it's a different type of labor, but it's also for me quite fun because they're totally fresh to it all and they don't know the acronyms, they don't know what they're expected to do, they don't they'll ask if I've got like not a pimp, they'll ask if someone's like managing, like they're so, and I'm like, whoa, like you're so fresh to this. So it's quite fun. One of the best things about our job, I think, is the variety. So I'm always up for different experiences with people. And I've had that as well from the podcast. So something I don't think you or I ever expected was that we would get clients that found us through the podcast.
Yeah, it's amazing. People have been listening for years as well, and they're really committed and they're really lovely. And then they're like, well, finally I decided I'd come and meet you. And it's like, wow, you've sort of been like a fan of, we thought it'd be just our like circle that would listen to the show, not the other way.
Yeah, I never thought it would go that direction. And those people have been such great clients. And
so much.
It's really interesting, I think, because again, it's about how people are finding us, right? And in the era of the internet, finding and booking an independent sex worker has been about looking at their glossy pictures, reading the list of services that they do or how they describe themselves and making a booking. So it primarily, and particularly before, TikTok and Instagram Reels and stuff were as popular, it was very much image-based, still image-based. And so the people that booked you, they booked you because, text as well. So they booked you because they liked what they saw in the picture and or what things you said you would do, essentially, to break it down. And, a lot of us now have broadened our social media platforms, so we're able to share a lot more about what we like, what we think, a bit more about ourselves. But the people that are coming through the podcast, some of them listen to us for ages before even knowing what we looked at beyond the little square that comes up on the, you know.
It's amazing. Like,
it's not about the way we look, which there's nothing wrong with that, but it's really nice when there are these people coming to see us because they've connected
with us.
Exactly. And then they maybe looked and went, oh, yeah, they're a bit all right. I'll give that a go, you know.
Yeah, they'll do.
Yeah. And that's phenomenal, and it makes for such engaging bookings.
Oh, so much. I get people who are like, oh, I know this is a little bit weird, but you said once in this episode, blah, blah, blah. Is that stalkerish that I remembered that
thing?
And I'm like, what? No, it's so flattering care about something that we've worked on and that you've remembered a thing. And like, that's so nice.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
We definitely don't remember. I'm like, did I say that? That's a weird thing for me to say. No, it's so cool. And then people who, you know, come and they go, oh, and I told this person to listen to your podcast and this person, now my friends listen, and they know I'm coming to see, you know, one half of somebody you love, and they're like, oh my God, you're seeing a celebrity. Like, it's a whole thing.
It's very, very, very flattering.
So I think that's such an unexpected positive that's come out of the show for me. I think we've both had some negatives as well.
Yeah, I negatives is probably a slightly strong word.
Agreed.
That I've sort of put there. But I think there has been difficulties. I think we've both had a few clients who have found certain episodes confronting, and not because of the subject matter being triggering in any sort of way, but it's brought up insecurities in them, or it has made them question certain elements of the dynamic that we have with them as an existing client. Mostly it's just due to overthinking. They are internalizing, or not even internalizing because it's, you know, but they're maybe even externalizing an insecurity that they have and projecting it onto our words.
Yeah.
That has happened a few times. We have a few clients who are like, look, I just can't listen anymore because I keep thinking everything's about me or that I've done.
Yep.
And
in which case, like, great. If you're feeling that way, stop listening. Like, do self-care, you know.
Exactly.
Like absolutely.
Exactly. You don't have to. And a lot of clients say to me, oh, I'm so sorry, I haven't listened to the latest episode. It's fine. Yes. I don't listen to podcasts. Yeah. You know, I listen to one a year maybe. I don't need to, you don't need to. Yeah, it's okay. No. It's fine. Yeah. That's very sweet. But yeah,
I think a lot of people go through phases with podcasts too.
Sure. Absolutely.
You know, you listen to a bunch at once and then you're a bit over it and you just want music or whatever. Yeah.
Totally. That's absolutely fine. You don't owe us to be read up. I'm not going to test you when you arrive.
Yes.
And so that's fine. If you decide that you don't want to listen for whatever reason, that's okay. And but often the things we're talking about are not about you. You can, I still think it's worth listening to it and going, ma'am, if you think I'm doing that thing, maybe you need to think about it. Maybe you do.
Sure. Yeah.
But generally it is just a case of people overthinking it. And there's not actually a problem. Another thing is that I get so many of my clients saying, oh, I'd really love to see Jenna, but she's so intimidating on the podcast. And I'm like, what? This gal, like Jenna, she's so nice. I'm the cooked one. I'm the one who will text you and say, fuck off. I'll contact the police. Like, I am so, I will abuse you.
If you don't do anything wrong, she will.
No, well, unless that's what usually you want. You know,
unless you paid for it. Yeah.
But it's so funny. People have got this impression because you're so like passionate and I think well-spoken and direct, and I'm a little bit more fluffy and a bit fucking goofy, that you're a bit of a hard ass. And I'm like, she's really not. She, you know, you're very professional, but in the bedroom, like, I've had clients and bless the client, because he's probably going to listen to this. Bless the client that said this to me recently. But he said, I feel like Jenna is like hard mode because she's so intimidating. And I was like, oh, I send so many of my nervous clients to Jenna because I say Jenna is easy mode because she is so easy. She's so easy. She's just a slut.
True.
She is fucking down to fuck. DTF.
Yep.
She, no, but she is so easy to arouse.
Fluffy.
Yeah. she's you know, yeah, she's very, very sensual. She's very welcoming and gentle and kind to her clients.
All right. She's you just, don't have to keep talking me up, babe.
No. But I'm being genuine. And it's, you know, people are like, oh, yeah, of course, it's your wife. You're going to say that. Yeah, well, I genuinely, this is how I clicked with her, because I felt that energy that she brings to her work is just so sincere and so engaging and overwhelming, and I can see my clients love it, and they tell me all the time, and that's why there's the La Genia effect when she comes to Canberra, and none of my clients book me when she's here, because she's so compelling and they all love her. So just a reassurance, and not here, you know, pimping her out, but yeah, I think that is a quote unquote negative. And I think eventually they get around to seeing you and they're like, oh my God, I fucking love her. But yeah, just yeah.
Look, it's something I don't want to say I find it triggering, but it is when I hear stories like that, because I've been being told that since I was three. You know, the boys at preschool said they were afraid of me, and then in primary school they said, you know, she's scary, and then in high school they said I was intimidating. Mm. And I've just been told that my whole life, and I don't know what I'm supposed to do about that. And it is funny, like I had one just last week. I was in Melbourne and I had a first timer, someone who was seeing me for the first time, and he got out of like his first shower. So we'd only known each other a few minutes at that point. And he came out and he was like, wow, you're actually just so nice.
Yes.
And I was like, thanks.
It shouldn't be a surprise.
Sure. Yeah. Is it like, and he was like, yeah, I just kind of thought, I don't know, you're quite like intimidating, you know? Mm. It's just, I don't know. I feel like I try so hard to be approachable and welcoming and you know, my favorite, and I think a lot of us have this, a lot of sex workers have this skill, because my favorite compliment from clients is when they say, you make me feel really safe, you make me feel comfortable, I can be myself. Like,
yes.
I'm sure we've all heard that. I think that is the one of the best skills in the job. So I try so hard at that stuff. So it's always,
but you do,
when people once
they get there, that you are like, that's
of course.
But obviously there's this concern. And I think it is a thing about a powerful woman. I think it's a woman who knows what she wants and stands by her convictions and speaks that.
Yeah.
And I think men are just maybe a little less used to
some
that.
Men. Yeah.
But some men. Yeah. And that can be. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell a little anecdote here, which was, I don't know, a few weeks into Mr. Love and I dating.
Right.
And we're in the car and it popped into my head. Like, I asked him if he found me intimidating, and he was like, what? No. Well, I mean, no.
Oh.
And I mean, I think I fell in love in that moment, because I'd never had a man
not be just intimidating.
Yes.
By you like that.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, I mean, I was 20.
Yeah.
I was 20 at that point. And now I've met many, and like a lot of my clients come to see me because they love that I do advocacy, and like, that's amazing, you know?
Sure.
But it's definitely like, at the risk of sounding like a tough bitch, I think it's definitely worth examining why, if you are a man who finds a woman who asserts her boundaries and takes a tough approach to people being abusive towards her, if you find that scary or intimidating, I think that's worth looking at.
Yeah. Mm, I think that's a really good point. It's very interesting. Yeah.
So moving on, we get a lot of we often get requests from people suggesting or asking to be guests on the show. And there is a form on our website that people can fill out, and some people have done that. And we haven't accepted many of those, have we?
Yeah, no. And I think people are – I always feel like it's one of those things where I'm like, oh, people are going to feel a little bit offended or rejected by it. But that's, I guess that's an inevitable thing of putting the offer out there, and whether somebody responds to it or not. There's always going to be collateral damage of that scenario. But there are a lot of very specific things that we're looking for guests on the show. And that doesn't mean that, you know, anyone that we don't respond to or anyone that we don't have on the show is not good enough, or that you're not representative of a certain group or anything like that. We're definitely not here to decide who represents one thing or who is good enough to communicate. We're not the gods of sex work media here. We're just doing our best at what fits in with the episodes that we've been thinking about coming up, things we've done recently that we've already covered, representing certain elements that we feel really need representation at the time. Yeah, there's a lot of factors that go into that. And so we think a lot about those sorts of things. And also our schedule. I mean, we're not pumping out that many episodes. Yeah. So
I think fully agree. There's a lot of different factors we're taking into consideration. But I don't want people who think that they have a great story to tell to then not contact us. Like, yeah. Do feel free to fill in that form on our website. And especially, like, we are always looking for people that have different experiences in the industry to us. You know, that's always key, because we have more episodes with just the two of us than we do mm-hmm. have guest episodes. Mm. So our perspectives are very much represented.
Yes.
So we're really looking for people that are different to us generally. But yeah, so please do feel free to let us know if you're keen, but just know that most people that have contacted us, we have, I think, only one person actually.
Yeah.
We have actually ended up having on the show, yeah. And everyone else we reached out and contacted. There's also been plenty of people that we've reached out to contact who have either said no for various reasons. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, one person said that they did not think speaking was their strength. They, yeah. you know, they were happy to do written stuff, but speaking doesn't put their best foot forward. Some people have just sort of said yes, but then been too busy and we haven't been able to make sure. It work. And then there's been people that haven't gotten back to us. So maybe that, I don't know, who knows? So yeah. Just so you know, if you feel like you've been rejected by us, we also feel like we've been rejected by people, so yeah, it's all good.
Yeah. And we're very much about that, the angle as well. There's a lot of people who are like, I'd love to come in and have a chat. And we're like, that's really great, but yes. We really like each episode to have a sort of point. Yeah. Even this one where we're just sort of nattering and catching up.
But yeah, I mean, you would have noticed every episode has a title, right?
Yeah.
And there's the one kind of focus point, one thing that we're trying to tell people about.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, there's been lots of people who've contacted us who we quite like, and we're like, yes. Oh, that person does seem interesting, but how do we really make this fit in with the goal of the show? And the goal of the show is to, raise awareness for the various facets of the industry and to lift up voices that are not ours, as well as create entertainment. So there are a lot of things we're sort of trying to balance there.
Totally.
We're just doing our best.
Yeah.
And we do appreciate everyone who reaches out, and we appreciate you listening, and we appreciate your support, and we appreciate you offering to share your experiences. That's so nice. And yeah, again, it may even not be that you don't have a great story or a great angle or whatever. It's just that this has been less of a priority to us in the past however many months. So,
yeah, so it has been a little while since our last episode. Mm. This is officially our final episode of season 3.
Woohoo!
So, yeah, why have we slowed down? We did. I think we briefly addressed this.
I think we touched on it a little bit.
Yeah.
I got overwhelmed. So, basically, we were going full ball. We were doing an episode a week plus a bonus episode. We were recording with video for the bonus. We were, you were on the socials nonstop. Like, we were going. And I do have to bring up that when we started this show, Jenna Love told me, let's do an episode every 2 weeks or so, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, no worries. And then I did. And then we were going 5 episodes a month. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And she's like, well, I had to get you on the show somehow. Like, I had to get it happening. And so she fucking conned me. No, it was great. And it was really going well. And I think that was especially during lockdowns. And that was as we were getting back into work. And so we had a lot more free time.
And for me, the podcast kept me going in 2021.
Yeah,
I was
so good.
In a really, really dark place in that lockdown. And I think Mr. Love was a little bit as well. And the two of us having this show kept us afloat. So I think that's why I pushed.
Yes.
Because, you know, I like to do lots.
Yeah.
I don't enjoy not being busy. So that's, definitely reflective of that place and time.
Yeah, and I'm so proud of what we have created all the way through. But, yeah, it's especially in the beginning, we just built up this little somebody you love community, and it's just been so great. And I love that so many people have stuck with us even as we've slowed down and become a little bit more sporadic. But it just hit a point where I was exhausted. So people who listen or follow me on various social medias will be aware that I have – a sleep disorder, and I have I'm just exhausted all the time as it is. And I am just the polar opposite to Jenna, where she always has to be busy. I can only do like one thing a day. I'm doing little quotation marks here, one thing a day. So I will have like one like big booking. Maybe I'll do a smaller booking. Maybe I'll like have a big appointment of something, and then I'll do like a little, I might do other little things, but like one thing a day. And recording the podcast often isn't as little as people might think. Even though we might just record for an hour, if we would have the cameras going or whatever, you know, I'd want to get myself presentable, and then I'd want to, you know, add some things to the plan, or I'd try and contribute as much as I could. And it would just take, for me, it would be my one thing of a day. And so then one day a week, if not, you know, 5 days of a month, would then be podcast only days. And so it meant that I was not able to work on those days, and I didn't feel rested on those days, and I didn't feel like I could do whatever other errands I needed to do on that day, because I would just be wrecked. And that's my own problem. Again, my sleep thing is what makes me so exhausted. Yeah, but it's exhausted.
Also not, there's not nothing you can do about that.
Well, yeah, at this
you know,
stage.
You say it's your problem, but it's not that you're, you've done that intentionally.
No.
You know, like
it just sucks. It's just a shitty way to live.
It is how you are. Yeah.
But at the moment,
it's how you are, and maybe you'll find some answers, which would be amazing. But
well, I did go to the sleep doctor, and they said she said today the only, you know, treatment that we're going to sort of look at, no matter what the sleep studies say, is stimulant medication for during the day, which may or may not be okay with my anxiety disorder. So,
yes.
it's all a bit bleak. Mm. I'm thinking maybe I just have to like shotgun Pepsi Max in the morning, like a whole lot of caffeine every day, and just like how people have coffee. I wouldn't do coffee though, ill. Pepsi Max.
I mean, maybe that's what I do.
Maybe it is. Maybe that's how you cope.
I wake up and have a can of Pepsi. So maybe that's
the solution.
You want to become more like me, just drink Pepsi all the time.
Coattails it up.
Yeah.
it's funny because I was a Coke No Sugar girl and then you were Pepsi
Same.
Max, and I changed Pepsi
I
Max
was
with
a Coke
you.
No Sugar. Well,
Yeah. I'm coattailing you all the time. Yeah. So yes, that's where we got to a point where I just didn't feel like I felt like I was falling behind with the rest of my life, and the day would come around to record and I would be stressed and I'd feel like I hadn't contributed to anything, and I would feel like I was phoning it in, and I felt like I was letting everyone down, and I was just spiraling.
Which
and I had
an
to
awful
say
feeling.
Yeah, I had to say stop, let's slow this the fuck down. And at that stage, we sort of didn't decide whether we were going to continue the show. Jenna discussed maybe doing the show on her own, and we didn't know whether I was going to come back or what we were going to do there. It was just like, let's just fucking stop for I don't know how long, which we did. And then I guess we haven't really even discussed what the plan was from there. We were like, oh, we'll do one here and we'll do one there. And we just sort of have. And when I sort of feel like I'm up to it, I'm like, let's do this. And that's where we've sort of been. I would love at some point for us to have a regular schedule again, maybe reduced. But I think, you know, I really love the show. I love doing this. I love that a lot of people have been asking me in recent months, when's the next episode out? I love that other people enjoy it as much as we do. But also your workload has increased massively since then as well. So, well, you know, we have to sort of work out a way to have that balance for both of us. So yeah, it's been a much more casual approach. But that's where we are now.
Yeah. Look, I think it's been a really great decision actually, as you know, as difficult as it was for me. And this is again, no, please don't apologize. Like that's the thing.
No,
it's
you
the
know,
two of us and
yes.
We're different people.
I'm always sorry when I do cause you pain because I know you feel pain. But I also recognize that the importance of healthy communication in our relationship, and I 100%. Need to let you know those things. And I'm like, sometimes I'm like, I know that this is, I mean, that's the dynamic. I'm like, I know this is going to make her feel like shit. But that's, you have to communicate.
But it's also not you making me feel like shit.
No.
It's my own trauma.
Yeah.
That's, you know.
But that's
that
love
needs
as well.
Me to be doing stuff 24/7. That's
when
my own
When you love
issue.
Someone, though, you don't want them to hurt,
of
whether
course.
It's your fault or not.
Of course.
You know? Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's been a really wonderful thing for us. I think that it's always a good decision to be creating stuff with space. Rather than pressure.
Yes.
I think I think constraints and boundaries are really helpful for creation, but spaces as well. So I think it's a great thing. And I'm excited for quote unquote season four, not that they're that seasony, but we are going to have a proper, I shouldn't say a proper break, but there won't be episodes released for a little while after this one. and then we will
hopefully
be back. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited about
it. I mean, hopefully be back with something exciting. That's yeah.
Oh, I'm excited for season 4.
We love
four.
It and we want to,
Yeah.
But it's just making it work for us.
Yeah, we have lives.
Yeah.
Unless we go into more lockdowns, unless another pandemic starts.
Yeah, that'd be, oh, fuck me. I mean, I know that's the worst thing to wish for.
So
but
traumatic.
God, I'd get so much done.
You say that now, but it would be 3 weeks in and you would be like, okay, now I'm
it's true.
In crisis.
True. Yeah, yeah, that's very true. Moving on to a really sad, shitty topic. The other thing that has changed since we started is that we've lost some members of our community. We wanted to mention two people in particular, but there are others. But these two people had an impact on our lives, and we think of our some of our listeners. It's this really, when you lose a member of the sex work community, it's felt by everyone in the community, and it's something that's really difficult to articulate to people who aren't in that community. I think it would. I assume it happens with a lot of marginalized groups, whether you knew this person because you followed their socials but didn't actually interact with them, whether you interacted with them only online, whether you, you know, had worked with them or whatever, even when you hadn't, you didn't know who they were until they died, it just, it's a gut punch and it, I don't know, we just feel it. It's like this shared feeling and it's, mm-hmm. it's just always, it's always difficult. And a friend of mine recently, when I gave her some crappy information, she said, it just never gets easier, does it? And I thought that was the most accurate way of saying it. So we did post this on our socials, but some of you will remember the episode we did with the wonderful Ruby Valentine. Ruby passed away earlier this year, and she was just such a, you know, a fierce, unrepentant, strong whore, and we absolutely loved her for that, and her loss was really felt by the community.
I wish I had more to add on that. I think, like a lot of people, I find this stuff really difficult to talk about. Oh, and I think Jenna is far more articulate than me.
Oh, God. Well, I was struggling. So.
On a good day. And this is not on a quote-unquote good day slash topic. So, look, this just meeting Ruby online, that was my only huge interaction with Ruby. She was incredible and just such a force. And yeah, like you said, just such a loss for the community and really upsetting. So we were so lucky to have had her on the show and to chat to her, and the community is richer for having had her in it. We also just wanted to mention the incredible Bella Green, who we also very, very recently lost. She didn't appear on the show, but she did a lot of things in the media. She was on various other podcasts. She was an incredible comedian, an author, a toilet reviewer.
Yes.
She was a character. And I only got to start to know her this year more personally. And yeah, look, I mean, she was gone too soon. They're always gone too soon. Another person who contributed so much just by putting themselves out there, and like as you said about Ruby, just being an unrepentant whore and just owning their sex work and all of their perceived flaws, I suppose, their societal rebellions. It was just a really incredible human being. And yeah, very lucky to have had her in the industry and to have met her. Definitely. I keep sort of speaking to people. You should go and buy her book, Happy Endings.
Do it.
We will link it. It is a fantastic book. A lot of people at the moment are listening to her reading of it on Audible, so you can download that and listen to her narrate it. And it's just not only is it beautiful in that. It's a little connection with an amazing person who has left this earth and who left a legacy. But it's also really an authentic and raw exploration of somebody's life and their experiences in this industry. And that's always important. And I think that's always valuable. So two really incredible women who are gone too soon. And we felt that we'd like to acknowledge them and just mention them in this show.
Yeah. And yeah, as I said, we have lost others in the industry, but these were just the ones that we had personal connections with. Mm. And also I think, you know, when I talk about this thing of us being in a marginalized community and us all feeling it, there's even a subset. There are subsets within that as well, right? Mm. And I think one of those is being face out and doing media and dealing with everything that comes with that. And both Ruby and Bella, you know, had some difficult experiences with media, with the community itself. And that's something that I think it, you know, yeah, those of us that are putting ourselves out there, it's a really special little circle of hell of shared experience.
Yes, because you will be criticized and analyzed from every
absolutely.
Angle.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so I'm so, so eternally grateful to them for putting themselves out there. And I also feel, you know, I feel the hurt on that level too. Anyway, don't know how to wrap that up. It's shitty, but lots of love to both of them and their and any of their loved ones that are listening, because I know there's a lot of them. We have a question for this week.
Dude, this one was interesting.
Very interesting question. Mm. I will read it out.
Okay.
The question is about ethics, and it is, my psychologist used a learned and regulated ethical code in comparison to a specific event involving a sex worker. In doing so, it was implied that the sex worker engaged in unethical conduct. Mm. I argued that sex workers don't have formalized or sex work specific training and therefore cannot be held to an undefined and untaught set of ethics. I believe that the sex worker conducted themselves appropriately. However, if a psychologist engaged in the same behaviors, they would be deregistered. How do you navigate, implement, and adhere to ethics in the sex industry?
That is a really intense question. Mm. Firstly, the little gossip piggy in me wants to know what was the event.
Want to know the situation.
Were they dating a patient / client? Is that what, do you reckon that's what it is?
Oh, that's I didn't even think of that.
Well, I wonder if that's what it is. Or were they, did they out somebody's personal, that's the only other thing that comes to mind.
And we don't know the situation, right?
We're speculating entirely.
We can't talk about that.
No idea. No, we can't talk about that situation.
But I do want to know.
I'm so curious. Yeah. How do we navigate and implement and adhere to ethics? Obviously, there is no code. I think there are underlying social codes. I think everyone expects in a normal society, normal being such a flimsy word, but I think a lot of people expect that when they see various kinds of professionals that their information will be confidential. And that will be respected, whether or not there are codes adhering to it, like there are in like payment card industries, you know, that your credit card number is safe, or within health.
Or where they've actually got systems.
Exactly.
To deal with that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. 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 But that's a whole different thing. But within the sex industry, I think, all clients would expect that. Oh, we're not going to go and post their full name on social media, and we're not going to contact all of their friends and family and tell them what they're up to and all of that sort of stuff. So I think that that's an understood social contract, which is not legally binding social contract, sadly. But generally, I do think that sex workers, try to stick to those sorts of social contracts because it's good for our business. If you if you do those things that seem unprofessional, you will burn your business and burn your income and burn your brand, and you will not have any roof over your head very quickly. So we you know, self-preservation dictates that we adhere to social conventions and social contracts. And so we humans and professionals, I think, do their best to try. That's not to say that there are not a whole lot of people out there who just do dodgy shit. And that's not sex work specific. That is everywhere. There are people who do, you know, depart from those sorts of conventions regularly. Yeah. And
And there's also people who are not sex workers who pretend to be in order to.
Gosh, that's a big thing for me.
Yeah.
I'm passionate about that.
Yeah. And I mean, this is, when people have had a situation where they've been, they've made a booking, paid a deposit, and then when they've turned up, there's no worker there or whatever. And this is a repeated thing. Like, I mean, I don't know the history of every situation, but there are cases where that happens. And they will be angry at that sex worker. And I'm like, but that is not a sex worker.
No, That is a scammer.
That's a catfish. That's a scammer. That's a what? Like, that's not. They're not. At no point are they actually doing sexual labor. That's not what that is. So sometimes, you know, it's we're not even talking about sex workers.
It's misplaced.
We're talking about people who are using the industry.
Yes.
To you know, commit crimes or to engage in really murky behavior.
Absolutely, yes. And as you just said, with murky behavior, beyond the payment deposit scamming sort of situation, there are sex workers who it's very hard to phrase, but I'm gonna delicately say it here, but who enter the industry not with a business sense of point of view, and that's okay. Like, you don't you know, that's just settle down, people who want to cancel me. But I'm sure there are people who enter the industry with intentions that they think are not that harmful, but actually are a little bit murky, as you said. They enter because they think it will give them easy access to people who may be vulnerable. And they're not telling themselves that it's going to be vulnerable people, but that's a side effect of it. And that they get into situations where they might take advantage of those people, whether they mean to or not, again, is a whole other part to be explored, and not for me to say. But there's a lot of situations there where there's a lot of grey area, and things can... can play out really unethically, I suppose, in relevance to the question. So how do you navigate it? I think we are all just doing our best along with what we feel is our own sense of code of ethics. We respect the boundaries that we would expect to be respected, or we treat others the way we would like to be treated. I think that's a big part of the sex work dynamic. Yeah, that's my understanding of I think, broadly, how we manage our ethics. That's what do you think?
Yeah, look, I at the risk of sounding like the easily triggered millennial that I am, I do take issue with this idea that sex workers should be held to some particular ethical standard.
Okay.
And this question asker has not said that. I really like the way they've asked the question, but you know, considering how unethical society is to us, I think it's a bit rich to turn around and expect us to be this moral beacons when, you know, we're constantly told that we're vectors of disease, but then we have to, you know, it's sort of like, it just seems a bit, it's a bit rough.
Such a good point. Yeah.
And that's not to say that I try to conduct my business as ethically as possible. And the sex workers that I hang out with, I think, are some of the most ethically responsible people that I've come across. But that's because that's their own moral compass, right?
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's also always worth keeping in mind, is that it is a compass. It's not a straight line. Yeah. Morality is not linear.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one person conducting themselves in a way that they think is you know, of the utmost ethics might not be the same to someone else. And I think that's, you know, that's the thing with ethics, right? There, as you said, grey areas, left, right and centre. We hear a lot of calls for this sort of thing in the industry, like a code of ethics, or that sex workers should undertake some kind of training course, or that there should be a register, then you can be deregistered if you, you know, do bad things or whatever. And I am vehemently against anything like
that.
Right?
Regulation.
We both are.
No.
Yeah.
We want normal laws to appear. So if you,
Well, and this is the thing. So if somebody is engaging, you know, if it's the difference between unethical and illegal, isn't it?
Yeah.
But because if somebody does, you know, commit a crime and you are a victim of crime, it's up to you how you want to continue with that. And if going to the police is how you want to deal with that, then okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, good luck with that. But I would suggest that beyond where somebody's actually committed a crime against you or victimized you, I think it's really tricky to apply any broad ethical standards across an industry that is full of some of the most marginalized members of society, and that has no or a very low barrier to entry.
Sure.
And that's, you know, and for me, I always say the low barrier to entry is a feature, not a bug. Mm-hmm. Often people who want, with the best of intentions, they want to professionalize the industry and they, you know, and in my mind, that's really not a good thing because it's so important in society for us to have jobs that don't require degrees, that don't require any formal education necessarily. It's, we need to have ways that people can gain income and a reasonable, a livable income without having to jump through hoops. I think that's really, really important. And more than anything important for women, for migrant workers, for people of color, for trans people, et cetera, right? And so, like, I don't want any code of ethics, I guess, is what I'm saying. And I think I agree with Holly that we all have our own code of ethics. We all have, you know, we all try to do things the way that we see fit. And the amount of situations, like we hear stories all the time, right? Where, and we hear from workers all the time who go, is it unethical for me to keep this person's deposit?
Yeah, this is where I was going to get to. You know, I don't want to victim blame, but I also want to start to get into the two sides of a story. Yeah. And have you read the terms and conditions of your deposit? Have you done your research when you're looking for a sex worker? And do we talk about that on this episode on how to look for, you know, look at the social media, you know, make sure that it's a legitimate, you know, maybe Google that sex worker's number and see if it matches up with other profiles of theirs or whether it's a, you know, there are various ways to try and confirm if this, the money, the person you're sending money to is real for starters. And then, you know, do you get a good impression from that person from their social media? Do you feel like this is somebody who has posted screenshots of a client's messages with the number showing that you're, and you're sitting there going, oh wow, well maybe my information won't be safe. Or have they posted something saying, you know, that they, I don't know. Again, I don't want to victim blame, and I certainly don't want to paint sex workers who do one action or another as cancelled or as bad. But I think that there are a lot of research that you can do as a consumer, and you should do when you buy anything on the internet or when you purchase anything, when you spend money or see anyone that you, maybe just, there's sometimes in life things, bad things happen, but I think there are a lot of avenues to try to avoid those bad things happening. Particularly as a consumer. I do feel really victim blamey here, and I hope anyone listening is not. I totally acknowledge that people can just be unethical. But
sure, absolutely.
But I also think that there are misunderstandings, and I also think that sometimes people have just not paid attention, or maybe, you know, they've been a little bit of a dick, and things have, you know.
Well, this is, I mean, my deposit policy says that if a client says or acts in a way that makes me feel unsafe, that I will cancel the booking and keep the deposit.
Yes.
And now I don't know if I've ever actually done that.
Yeah.
And generally speaking about things that people who are socialized as women tend to do, you know, I'd prefer to just give the money back and not, and you know, de-escalate the situation. But, you know, I have that in there because there are things that people do to us that make us feel unsafe.
Yes.
And if you look at that in a court of law or something, and it's black and white, and who knows? I mean, my deposit policy probably wouldn't hold up in a court of law.
Yeah.
But if it's he said, she said, and, you know, he's saying she took my deposit and then didn't give it back to me and didn't follow through on the booking.
Yeah.
That looks like I stole some money, right? But was he threatening me? Was he suddenly using my real name that he found out? You know, like, there's just so, you know,
And you're not cashing in there. I just want to clarify that. You haven't, again, some people might have taken a full deposit. Some people might have, you know, full prepayment or whatever. But usually the deposit is a token amount to hold the space, and you've done some back and forth with this person, and you've put the time aside, and it might be a few days before and whatever. It's a... The deposit is covering the loss of the work and the time that you've invested in this person and all of that. Like, it's not, oh, well, that's my compensation for you being a dick. It's you committed to this booking, and then you did things that were absolutely fucking terrifying, and you've engaged me to this point, and that's, you know, so you've forfeited that. So that, it's not a happy payday for us where you sort of go, ha, I've got your deposit now.
Not at all.
You've done something really unhinged that's disturbed me.
I do think, and look, I also don't think this psychologist did anything wrong. It sounds like she was just using it to as an example, you know.
Yeah.
But I do think often when, you know, our catch cry of sex work is work, I think sometimes people hear that and what they hear is sex work is a professional career. And that's not what we're saying. And I think it so often gets compared to, psychology or lawyers or doctors. And it's like, babes, until we're getting the same respect that those professions are getting, like I don't know why we're being put in that basket. I don't know why we're being held to this ridiculous standard.
Yep.
And I think and that's commonly misinterpreted in a bunch of different ways. Like when we say it's just like any other business, it is just like any other business, but it's also not. Because it is quite a unique business, and it's the same as when the amount of times lately I've heard workers report, and I've had it happen to myself, when clients have turned up with their credit card and expected to pay in a swipe machine, you know.
Killing me lately.
It's happening a lot. Or they think, oh, can I just transfer it to you? And it's because – and it's almost like, wow – like you've got the idea that we're like any other business where you can turn up with your card. So like, great. But also we're not, because we face significant financial discrimination.
Yes.
And we cannot risk just taking a deposit on the spot and then the next day you contact the reverse bank and reverse it away. We can't take those risks.
Yeah.
So it's almost this double-edged sword of people taking us too literally when we say it's like any other business.
Yes, we love you seeing us We love you seeing us as legitimate businesses, but like you seeing us as too legitimate. See us as legitimate and then add a big layer of stigma on top.
100%.
That
is entirely without our control. Because of course the normal response to that is, oh, well, you just want cash so that you don't have to pay tax.
I mean, obviously, yes, but also...
But we don't... We want cash because we don't have another fucking option.
No, yeah, it is, like,
And people, I understand, they don't realise that, but it's frustrating.
As you've recently posted, when you went to Sydney Airport and everything went down and you couldn't even use the... I mean, I've had clients turn up and say, well, can I Beam it to you? Can I transfer it? Which, for those listening who aren't aware, Beam is a payment, immediate payment transfer app. So
similar
it's,
to and Cash App or Venmo.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
In Australia.
But they will say, yeah, can I Beam that to you? And then half the time they don't even have their Beam set up and they've got to find their Medicare card and they've got to put the information in to get the app going, and then their internet's not working. And so we're sitting there for the first 15 minutes of the booking while I'm nervously thinking, are they going to go, oh, it doesn't work. Well, I don't know. And like, so cash, I can see it immediately.
Yep.
Off we go.
So, yeah, sex work is work, but we're not lawyers. That's the, you know. And we don't want to be. That's fine. We're not asking to be. We just want you to know that it's a job. That's literally all that statement means. Not anything more than that.
As always, we'd like to say a huge thank you to our incredible patrons. Thank you to our new, very generous somebody, Bree. I think I missed your thank you a few months ago, so double thank you. Our even more generous somebodies, Alex, Dave, The Ashley Stafford, The Rhiannon Rhodes, Nomad, Adele, Andrew, Our Secret Admirer, Our Footstool, Lachlan, Leslie, Sub London, Mr. E, NK, The Ophelia Parker, Scott C, Simon, Steve, Timmy, Wheezy, Luke, Frankie, Is Lost in Thoughts, Cuddle Koala, The Sasha Sins, and Stanley Doolittle. And an extra, extremely big thank you to our extremely generous somebodies, Aaron, Andrew, Adam Smith, Pete, Sienna Saint, Adam Moore, and Tim. This has been so much fun. I've missed recording. I hope you guys have enjoyed this episode. A little bit of a catch up, a little bit of a refresh on where we're at. As always, if you have questions for us, please send them through to us on social media. If you're a patron, flick it through to us on there. I am terrible at writing back. I am always behind on, well, yeah, but I've always said I'll take care of the stuff on Patreon.
It is your job. Yeah.
Barely done it. So, you know, that's all on me.
It's all good.
But please do send things through to us. We always love to hear your feedback on the show, your opinions, your questions, Anything you think is relevant, we love that. We appreciate your listening. We appreciate your patronage if you are a patron and continuing to be one, especially with the sporadic releases of content. That is obviously very, very kind and generous of you. We hope you find lots of entertainment on our Patreon to keep you busy in the meantime. But thanks for all of the support. We're very grateful, and we hope we keep you entertained.
Thanks, team. It was so nice chatting again. And get excited for season 4. We are.
Woohoo. I don't woohoo. Take the woohoo out. I always do woohoo. But I am. I feel woohoo, but I take it out. Don't do it because it's really annoying. But I do feel so excited. I'm really excited about season 4.
Yeah, we're definitely keeping that in.
No, right. No. Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Please look out for us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Patreon. Our name everywhere is Somebody You Pod, as in podcast. Our Patreon starts at just $3 a month, and you can get all of our episodes ad-free and a day early, plus bonus episodes, behind-the-scenes action, bloopers, and more. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the voices of sex workers. And remember, somebody you love might just be a sex worker.